Michigan courts, especially district courts, assess criminal defendants all sorts of fines and fees. This revenue is crucial for cities and counties, and these fines and fees vary widely across Michigan. Ingham County relies on them for $800,000 of its annual budget. The district court in East Lansing, according to city budget numbers, has netted the city $3 million a year for the past 3 years. It's one of the only departments that actually makes money for the city. But earlier this summer, the Michigan Supreme Court ruled unanimously in People v. Cunningham that the courts did not have independent authority to impose any court cost they like on convicted defendants. The ruling has many in local governments worried about their budgets, and the legislature is working on a law that would restore the funding mechanism. But this also raises fundamental concerns about our criminal justice system and whether funding courts and local governments on the backs of criminal defendants is good policy, as it tends to disproportionately affect lower-income folks and people of color. Just last week, the City Council in Ferguson, Missouri, proposed changes to their court's fees and fines, as they were seen as fueling some of the anger and mistrust between residents and their local law enforcement. Here to help us better understand this issue is Thomas Boyd. He's the chief judge of the 55th District Court here in Ingham County. Welcome back to Current State, Judge Boyd.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
Talk to us about the decision in People v. Cunningham. This happened earlier this summer in the Michigan Supreme Court. Why is that important? What did it do?
Well, it's interesting because what People v. Cunningham did is point out a little-known anomaly, a problem within the way that court funding has been allowed to evolve. Mm-hmm. Not the law of court funding, but just the facts of court funding. Since the district courts were created in about 1968, slowly but surely, their own revenue has been used to fund their operations. It's never been legal. It was never the plan, but it's just like water. I always say water's like the Colorado River. Pretty soon you start with a river, and the next thing you know, you have the Grand Canyon. Money will go where money wants to go. Mm. And so what happened in People v. Cunningham is the Supreme Court narrowed in on one specific section of state law. It's section 769.1K. That's how obscure it is. It's .1K. And what that section says is the court may assess any fine, any cost, and goes on to say you can assess costs for a court-appointed attorney and a variety of other things. And the Supreme Court in this case, People v. Cunningham, said that does not mean you can have any cost. It just means any cost as otherwise authorized by law. In reality, the places where costs are authorized by law are very few and far between. And there are no general provisions for court costs. In fact, the law in specific criminal offenses may say that the court can assess the cost of prosecution. And to help us understand what that means, we have a Court of Appeals case from 1982. It's the Saginaw County Public Libraries versus the judges of the 70th District Court. That case tells us that the court is not allowed to assess costs for the general day-to-day operation of the court itself.
Well, if this has never been legal, how did we get here? Was this lack of vigilance or what?
I guess lack of vigilance is a good way to describe it. I mean, where we are is a situation that the courts have been allowed to slowly but surely increase costs and fund themselves. And it's never been legal. In 1982, the Court of Appeals reminded us it wasn't legal. There's even more to it. I mean, if we look at the question of why is it not currently legal, you really jump into the next question, which you raised in the opening, which is, is it a good idea? And we know several things from the history of Michigan. Michigan's first constitution in 1835 says that any penal fine levied by a court has to go to the public libraries, permanently severing the court's work from its product, the fine. In 1962, the Constitutional Convention, which gave us our current constitution, the district court was created conceptually because its predecessor, the Justice of the Peace System, had become corrupt. And one of the main problems with the Justice of the Peace system was that each Justice of the Peace got to keep a percentage of the cost that they levied. So the Constitutional Convention said, no more of that. We've got to keep the money that the court generates separate from the court and separate from the individual court officers. And so they created the authority to allow for the district courts to be created.
What about nationally here? What legal history can we look at for? Is this an issue across the nation?
Well, you know, I can't claim to be an expert about the law in all the states. I certainly am familiar with the examples from Ferguson, Missouri. I don't believe there's anything quite as extreme going on in Michigan. I mean, Ferguson, Missouri is a community of 21,000 people that assessed $2.6 million in court fines last year. It's pretty extreme. It's interesting that the popular media is beginning to pick up on that side of the Ferguson story. It was Governing Magazine, which is sort of a trade journal for bureaucrats, that picked up that story first and was pointing on the fact that a lot of the anger in the streets of Ferguson wasn't aimed at the police, but was aimed at the local court. NPR, as a part of their national series on being fined and jailed, I can't remember exactly what the tagline is, but they picked up on it, and I think it's going to be a bigger and bigger story. I don't know a lot more about the other states. I'm sorry.
And today we are looking at a situation where all kinds of county operations are funded through these fines. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what happens first and foremost is the court itself is funded by those costs. And we have to separate the words fine and cost. I know it seems like a fine point, but the state constitution since 1835 has said every penal fine must go to the library. So if someone is charged under state law for a criminal offense and a fine is assessed, that fine goes to the public library in that community. The separate concept, which is a court cost, is what stays within the local community. It gets very complicated, but that's the basic premise. And so we're talking about these court costs. And yes, in the Ingham County, in every year but last year, the district court has generated more revenue than its expenditures, leaving the surplus to be used to fund other programs.
And we didn't end up with glimmering libraries here in the process either, did we?
Well, I think that the premise of the 1982 court case in Saginaw County is that the libraries were seeing the phenomenon of the decrease of the fine and the increase of the cost. So it was like a teeter-totter. Prior to the creation of the district court, a fine was going to the library, and that was a steady stream of revenue for them. They noticed in the 70s, the teeter-totter flipped the other way, and that is the fines went way down and the court costs, this new creation to fund the court itself and to produce revenue for the funding unit, local government, went up. And that's what they were challenging in that 1982 case. What the Court of Appeals said in that case was, it's okay for the court to levy a small fine if they want to. There's no law that says they have to levy a certain amount of fine. But there's no provision in law for the court to assess costs to fund its day-to-day operations, which is, of course, what they were doing.
Let's get back to the value of this as policy. What's wrong with this way of funding our courts and other public business?
Well, rather than
I guess, there an example you can cite?
Sure. And rather than sort of embrace the notion that something's wrong, what I'd like to do is embrace the notion that we should have a much broader dialogue about this before we make the historic shift from not allowing courts to fund themselves to now legally allowing courts to fund themselves. And the best example is, you know, if your son or daughter is accused of being a minor in possession of alcohol on the east side of Hagedorn Road in Meridian Township, and they come down to see me as the judge to determine if they're guilty or not guilty, do you really want in the back of my mind the thought that, geez, if she's not guilty, I don't get $200? Mm. I mean, is that really the thought process that we want courts to go through? So the question of whether or not the courts should receive or have an interest, a profit motive, in the outcome of every case, I mean, when you say it like that, it seems absurd, of course. I mean, the economic model that serves the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker, I think may be inappropriate for a court of justice. The United States Supreme Court in 2009, in a case named Caperton versus Massey, disqualified one of the justices of the West Virginia Supreme Court because a litigant in the case had made a major contribution to his campaign. The justice refused to disqualify himself. And saying, it doesn't affect me that he gave money to my campaign. It didn't go in my pocket. The United States Supreme Court said no. That is either a conflict of interest or at least the appearance of a conflict of interest. And the justice systems need to be above that. Now, that case in 2009 was so significant that the Michigan Supreme Court changed the disqualification rules for all judges in Michigan and specifically adopted the standard set out in Caperton versus Massey, naming it in the court rule. So if I'm to be held to a standard of above the appearance of impropriety. And we know from West Virginia that money coming into the campaign to help the justice become elected, how far is it to say that the money comes into the court to to help me do my job. Mm. I mean, we're an elected judiciary in Michigan. And if my court doesn't have enough money to do its job, it's going to reflect poorly on me. How far from the back of somebody's mind is that every single time they hear a case? So what the District Court Judges Association in Michigan is trying to do is to have a full dialogue on this issue.
Judge Thomas Boyd is our guest. He's the chief judge of the 55th District Court here in Ingham County. We're talking about the issue of court fines and fees and how that money is spent. Can you talk to us about what fines and fees could be considered reasonable? What would be reasonable fines and fees for a court to levy?
Well, I guess, you know, that would be something that I think that we need to have a full dialogue about. I think as a result of some amendments to current legislation, we're probably going to get this dialogue in the next couple of years. Representative John Walsh is the sponsor of House Bill 5785, which will put a Band-Aid on the situation and allow courts to continue to fund themselves with the assessment of costs, but only for 2 years. And during that two-year period of time, this debate that the District Judges Association is looking for will in fact, ensue. But I can suggest to you that a court cost, if it were appropriate to be levied, is just a mathematical calculation. Accountants can tell us how much it cost me to handle a drunk driving case.
What percentage of court fines and fees? Have you thought about this in enough detail to get a handle on what percentage of court fines and fees are legitimate? Is there a percentage that you can assign to that?
Well, I'm not really sure that I would call any court fines and fee illegitimate, other than all of them, because there's no law in place. But the point is that the culture that's been allowed to develop is that the district courts, by and large, fund themselves on court costs. Not all. In more economically struggling communities, like the 54A District Court in the city of Lansing, they don't produce more revenue than their expenditures. The city of Lansing, the citizens of Lansing support the court. It depends on the economics. So to say, you know, legitimate, illegitimate, I guess I wouldn't be comfortable with that. But I can tell you that we know how much it costs one case to be processed, because that's just accounting. You know, we can tell you exactly how much it costs. Mm-hmm. The problem is that the expectation over the years has developed that the court costs isn't going to only support that case, but the traffic cases and the civil cases. So the civil cases where there's a set fee, if you want to file a motion in a civil case, it may be $20. Well, it costs us much more than $20 to handle that motion. It's only in the criminal case where there is no law that the thing has kind of got out of control, and not only are we paying for the motion, but to make up the difference in the civil side and to produce general fund revenue for the county that has nothing to do with the criminal case.
What's happened to Senator Walsh's bill? Where is this now in the legislature? Are you watching that?
Representative Walsh, who's the Speaker Pro Tem of the Michigan House, his bill 5785 is out of the Judiciary Committee on the House floor. I believe there would be an amendment to allow for this two-year period of dialogue and discussion while this Band-Aid is in place. I would expect that bill to be taken up maybe as early as today or tomorrow. I certainly don't have any great inside knowledge about the process, but I think that's what's going to happen. And I guess the last thing I want to say is that we do, in this dialogue, need to consider the propriety of having the drunk driver pay for 100% of the case costs. I mean, is the drunk driver, in fact, the only person who's better off because of his arrest? Hasn't all of society benefited from the drunk driver's arrest? And shouldn't we all participate in the expense in some way for the fact that we're safer? If the criminal justice system focused exclusively on public safety, we would do our jobs differently than we do today. Today, we focus on revenue to collection, and we focus on tax collection, and we focus on other things that distract us from public safety, which should be our prime mission.
Are you confident about what could unfold in the legislature? Are you encouraged by what the Supreme Court's decision has triggered and set in motion here?
Yeah, I am. I really am. I think it's kind of accidental. I don't think they intended it. I'm really encouraged by the approach that Representative Walsh is taking with this two-year period of dialogue and discussion, and I believe that Governor Snyder is going to weigh in on this in a positive way, and I'm hopeful for the future.
Enlightening as always. We want to thank Thomas Boyd, Chief Judge of the 55th District Court here in Ingham County. Thanks for sharing your insights with us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.